7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friends, to episode 236 of Color of Magic, your Magic and Gaming podcast, where we talk about all types of issues that affect gamers at and away from their gaming tables and computers. I am your host, Power Dragon, and hopefully, as this weather's starting to warm up, not getting beat up too bad down in Texas, my main man, Brian Sionic. How's it going, dude?
It's going well. We're getting moving on down the road toward a kind of sort of summer.
Yeah, we're still in that, like, transitioning to spring phase here, so it's like the days are still nice at like 60-65, but then like evenings are still like upper 30s, low 40s, so it's kind of weird. We can't quite transition to a good spring yet, but we're getting there. It's still nice during the day, so I'll take it. But man, we got a lot of things to cover this week. Surprisingly, there was one of those ones where it doesn't feel like there was a lot of news. But then you start looking and like, man, a lot of things are still happening around us right now. But before we get into that, I want to remind you, hey, if you want to support us, you want to promote your things on the show, you want to get some people to your websites, send us a message. We're available on social media. You can hit me up anywhere. We do have a decent reach and maybe we can help you sell some stuff. But also, as a listener, as a viewer, you can go to patreon.com/colorofmagic. And you can support us there and get a shout out just like Dylan Bose. Thank you so much for being a patron. And of course, you can get some goodies over at colorofmtg.com/shop. But that does bring us to our lead story, which kind of snuck up on me. I just popped open the internet today. And I was like,
look up on a few people.
Yeah, I'm like, what are we going to talk about as our lead story? And it turns out the president of Wizards of the Coast has put in her resignation, which will be due, I guess, at the end of the month, April 26th.
Yeah, so like 2 weeks, basically, as you would at, like, Walmart. See how...
Yeah, basically, a little more than 2 weeks, right? 15 days or whatever. So, or not even that much. No, it's literally right at 10 days now, I guess. So, yeah, this one's tough because... And the reason I wanted to talk about this is a lot of people... There are some people on the internet that have already started the speculation, right? And it's like, oh... That last sec was so trash, Hasbro probably fired her. It's like, bruh, she was there for 2 years where they made over $1 billion, right? They ain't going to fire her over one bad set, especially considering Thunder Junction is already out of the gates doing really well from across the board from talking to a bunch of different websites and retailers.
Now, the people I saw, they're not saying one thing. They're mentioning everything bad that happened over the past 2 years, which you can fire steadily anybody if you've had... I mean, and I think most of the stories I've read have mentioned, like, all the good stuff. Lord of the Rings, again, you know, $1 billion profit. And then, of course, all the bad things, too. Like, obviously, Pinkerton Raid, March of the Machine, Aftermath. What the heck was that? You know, it's probably never happening again. So she had a lot of good and a lot of bad during her reign.
But, you know, I would also say, like, stuff like the Pinkerton stuff, I'm pretty sure that's a Hasbro thing based on Hasbro's history and their relationship with the Pinkertons. And I don't think that was a Wizards decision particularly. But again, I'm not going to know that 100%. I'm just basing that on having been there and talked to people.
And what always happens is, you know, like whoever made the decision probably isn't somebody that's even in the line where they're up to be fired. But
oh, definitely not.
In the same way, none of the people just got laid off had anything to do with it, but they're not executives, so people.
Yeah, but I kind of want to talk about, like, let's look at the other side of the conversation that we know because it's public record. She got $6.5 million bonus last year, right? Which, to be fair, yes, they laid a bunch of people off, and that's always annoying, right? When you have a bunch of layoffs and then you see somebody near the top get a pot, which also means,
or not just annoying if you're one of the people laid off, life changing.
Yeah. And to be fair, some people above her probably got 2 or 3x that, because that's how
they did.
That's how this crap works. Even though it shouldn't, we see it at every business. There's a bunch of layoffs, and then somehow there's still bonuses for all the people at the top. The other side of that is, yeah, you made 1.4, 1.5 billion, whatever it was. She probably hit all the metrics to get all the bonuses. All right, you know, whatever. But that said, whatever her pay already is on top of the extra $6 million, she's not hurting to walk away and go take another job. You know what I mean? Like,
she could be taking the job. She could be retiring at this point. We don't know. She could have health issues, or again, she might just, you know, be like you said, $7 million almost is a lot. That might be the number her accountant told her to hit where, hey, you're good. You ain't ever got to work again. But $7 million feels like, hey, depending on where you live, you probably ain't ever got to work again if you, you know. And again, that was because she came to Withers from Microsoft. So I'm sure she hit a bunch of bonuses at Microsoft before she got to Withers. So yeah, I'm sure she is in no way hurting financially.
Yeah, and that's the thing I will say too. I'm glad you brought that up about her coming from Microsoft, because now I haven't had extensive conversations, but I've only talked to her in passing at a couple of events or whatever. Nothing crazy, but I didn't get the vibe ever that she was way into the job, you know, that she was into the products or whatever, more just good at doing the type of job she does. She might have been a little bit of into the D&D side of things more than magic, but I didn't, like, when I talked to Chris Cox when I was there, like, immediately you got the vibe that he was excited to be part of these brands, right? Like, he was a D&D player, he'd played some magic, he wanted to know more about it, he was always inquisitive, he was always talking to people on different arms of the company, you know, even at shows, he was trying to understand what was going on and talking to people. And like, I didn't get that same vibe, which isn't anything wrong with that. Like, she, again, company made a bunch of money under her. So like, whatever, right? She's doing her job, but she might just have had other opportunities potentially. Right. But like you said, could she be sick? Maybe. Hell, I don't know if she has a spouse. Maybe the spouse is getting an awesome job cross country and gotta move.
Any of these things, you know, it could be possible.
Yeah, but the other thing too is, once you're at that level, once you're president level, CEO, whatever, for any of these companies, it becomes very easy to get the next job at that level.
Yeah.
Especially when she can look back and say, well, the couple of years I was there, we increased profits this much year over year, and we cleared $1 billion each year or whatever. That's going to look real good if you're looking to apply to take a job somewhere else, right?
Microsoft made obviously a whole bunch of money, launched a new console, and definitely she can argue that she laid the groundwork for now what is the biggest gaming company on the God's green earth at this point.
It's possible. I mean, and that's the stuff too. That's why I tell people we have to be careful about speculating on this type of stuff, because there are a ton of reasons that she may be leaving the job, and could be anything. I mean, for all we know, she could have just had a fight with somebody at the higher up at Hasbro and just said, that's enough. And she's leaving. You know what I mean? Like, it could be that simple. It may not be anything crazy. I'm assuming it could be her decision. Maybe there was a thing where somebody said, if you don't resign, you're fired. Like,
It literally feels like it was a bit of a surprise, like we kind of alluded to earlier, because they don't have a replacement yet. And usually companies, when they announce, hey, somebody's leaving, usually within the same press release or the very next press release you get from the company is who the new hire is. So it feels like it was a sudden thing.
That's a good call, too. It does feel kind of like they were a little surprised with the filing, which, by the way, I guess I didn't mention that, but anytime you have a major bit of news and you're a large traded company, you do have to put a filing in. And that's for the SEC, for investors, for whatever. So they know what's going on. And obviously, Wizards of the Coast is one of the major arms of Hasbro, with Magic and D&D being some of their franchise brands. So if you get a new head of business, obviously that's going to have to be news and be filed. That's how everybody found out about it.
Because you know, even just with jobs I've had, like community newspaper level, you generally, new editor goes away, you would like to, in the same story, announce who the new editor is to make it look like you know what you're doing. And obviously you're not always able to do that because people do get sick. People do have fight to say, hey, you know what, F you, I'm out of here. Or, you know, people do poach your talent. I had somebody tell me after the offer was made, and by the way, without consulting me, that, yeah, when they bought that paper, they tried to buy you also, but I told them you weren't for sale. Like, I might have been. No, nobody.
For real.
I felt kind of, this felt kind of 1800s, like two of y'all who I'm pretty sure were white.
Don't be talking about for me. Shoot.
Talked about whether I was for sale, and nobody talked to me about it.
She might have taken your mercenary bag away. They might have had a briefcase.
Right?
Like, don't ever say I ain't for sale. Shoot. Like, but yeah, I think your point is totally valid, right? That without there being a successor named, it's very likely this was just her decision and some opportunity or situation in her life came up that she felt the need to go ahead and resign. Which, again, we could probably, like, well, we listed 6 or 7 reasons that all make a lot of sense that she may be walking away. But yeah, it's an interesting bit. I just...
We may find out next week. We may never find out. Obviously, if she announces a brand new job in a week or two, then we know what was up. But again, if it's something that in her personal life or in her family, we may never find out.
Yeah, you know, this kind of brings up another thing we've been seeing too with different, on a lower level, obviously, with different content creators across the internet. You know, we had a bunch of them retiring or whatever, and people are freaking out about it. But it's also some of them have just saved up enough money,
right,
that they can just do whatever they want now or go for, start up a different company or do whatever. Right. And
yeah, when you've, you know, gone to work, especially as a content creator, pretty much every day for, let's say, 5-10 years grinding on stuff, it's nice to be able to, hey, you know, just take some time off.
Yeah. Same thing in Miss Williams' kind of situation here is that she's had higher level jobs for a while now, probably all being, at least for the last several years, deep 6 figures or even 7-figure jobs. So it's not like she's without money. And then you got a big bonus on top of it. That opens up the door to do whatever she kind of wants to do from here.
And those things come with a lot of stress. You know, they don't pay you the big money. We're on here, you know, on a magic podcast talking about it. Your job or my job doesn't usually come with that level of scrutiny. I was hearing somebody complain about, you know, an athlete, like, well, I mean, they should be able to take all the criticism. Like, I take criticism, and the criticism Kevin Durant gets is a little bit different than what you get, you know?
Bruh, and it's constant. That's the other thing, right? There's no jobs.
There are not any talk shows based where they're going to spend a whole hour talking about how you're gutless and how you should play with your leg hanging off. It's just,
it's a tough deal. And the other reality, too, is it's possible she just took the job coming from Microsoft and the job was just so drastically different and ended up not being what she wanted to do at the end, right? Like, that's possible, too. Companies have different structures. The things each position is asked to do is different. You know, because of the nature of the products and the company, the ask may be different and it just may not be what she wants to do. That's okay. Like, I know a lot of people who've taken jobs, did them for a couple of years and went, this isn't what I was hoping it was going to turn out to be, or I couldn't turn it into the thing I wanted it to be. So I'm just going to take another job somewhere else. Right.
And also sometimes it happens fast. You know, sometimes the people you thought you were working with, they start leaving, they start getting poached, or, you know, they may have a crisis that requires them to go home. And then just, that wasn't who you thought you were working with. And the culprit or the culture changes and you're like, this isn't really what I signed up for.
You know, also between layoffs, between people quitting, moving, whatever, the structure of the organization change or the people you liked working with are no longer there. Like, that could be part of it. Like, there's a lot of reasons something like this could happen. Like, even the more we're talking, we're just like more and more reasons. It's just like, man, that's why speculating on this stuff is tough. And again, I would feel really bad if I speculated on some like crazy reason. And then we find out like, oh, she's just got sick family and she wants to be next to them for the end of their life or something or whatever. Okay. Right. Like, didn't you feel like a jerk?
Kate Middleton. Everybody doing all the jokes about Kate Middleton. Then you find out she's got cancer. People are like, oh!
Yeah, exactly. Oh, right? Ew. Yeah. Just like oops. That, right?
Just the whole time. Oops.
The whole time you've been making jokes about somebody who was potentially going through, like, cancer and chemo treatments, right? So, yeah, it's crazy. Again, nothing wrong. Keep your eye on the story.
That's why we talked about, because, you know, it's something that everybody in the community is going to be talking about. It's certainly something that's interesting to talk about, but again, as Daquan mentioned, he's met the woman and at the end of the day has, you know, no better insight than I do or the people on Twitter that are speculating. Just we may know in a week, we may never know.
Yeah, but let's move on to the soapbox, because I think we have a couple of things this week. And man, this one, I feel like almost we could almost just set a clock. Just know, like, make a calendar, and then, like, you know, give it about 18 months or so, and there's going to be another one of these stories. This time, Warhammer players getting bent out of shape because a section, I believe it's called the Custodians or the Custodes, depending on how you whatever language you want to use, of their lore are now allowed to have women be part of it. Not that they just, like, scatter women through all the different things. Not like magically all these, like, super space marines or whatever all became women or whatever. Just, like, a section of the lore is like, oh, yes, people of this can also be women. And apparently, they just got mad and blew up about it. Now, I mean, it's not everybody. A bunch of people are like, yeah, it's not that big a deal. But there are some, a very large vocal group, likely the vocal minority. But the same people you see all the time complaining about stuff. And
people that hate women and people of color and anybody, you know, who is not who is not straight white male, essentially.
Here's the crazy thing, though. Everything aside, women already exist in Warhammer 40K, and they have for, like, hell, I don't know, 30 years at this point.
In battle. I mean, it's nothing is new about that.
Yeah, Sisters of Battle, or whatever they call them now, Ceritas the Adeptus or something, but some fancy name for Sisters of Battle.
Yeah, that.
But they've existed for a long time. Like, there's a whole faction with models, women, and, like, the dresses and the guns and whatever, and it's just like, so what are we mad about? Like, even if they had changed the lore specifically to allow women into another section of the lore, okay, they already exist anyway.
That's like, you know, militaries have done in real life when they, especially when they run short of people, because anytime you're discriminating in military, you will eventually be you know, you may run out of people to put on the front line, and then you got a problem. When militaries do this, it's not because they've decided, hey, you know, we love women so much, they're usually short on bodies. same thing with including minorities. Like, hey, you know what? We need more cannon fodder. Go ahead and relax those
restrictions. Yep, get them in here. I'll say this. Like, from the quotes I could find from Games Workshop responding to people, and admit, I didn't do the deep dive to understand, because I would literally, I'd have to go back and read, like, 3 days worth of stuff. So I'm just being clear here. But according to what I read in the responses, they basically are saying women have always been able to be part of this. We've just never prioritized writing stories and stuff about it. So if that is true, then that gives even less credence to the arguments against it. Of, like, this has always been able to be a thing. We just haven't felt the need to write the stories or do whatever, introduce those characters or whatever. But here's the thing, and this is what we come back to a lot on the show when these issues pop up. If these things existing, in this case, adding women to this section of the lore, gets more women interested, or hell, people in general, more people interested, that's better for you at the end of the day. Like, the company that makes your thing makes more money. So then they get to continue making the things that you like. They create more players that you get to play with at your local stores and at conventions and whatever. So it becomes easier for you to find a game when you want to. Potentially, more opportunities to make more friends and more life stories and whatever. Like, you know as well as I do, you meet some people at some of these games and stores, whatever. Like, hell, that how we came together was with gaming.
Right.
You know, right? So
most of the friends I have is people I met through gaming.
Yeah. So I'm just thinking, like, it just doesn't at its core make sense to want to push that away. Because it doesn't change anything about the game fundamentally. Rules are still the rules. If you like playing Eldar or Space Marine or Chaos or whatever, like, you still get to do that. Those things didn't change. You still get all the same models. You still have the same rules. So
if you don't want to use these particular characters, you never have to.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You don't have to interact with that part of it. So it's a very, like, we know damn well where they're coming from, but, like, it just doesn't make sense, really. It really doesn't. Like, It's and, a net, you know, positive.
Things like prejudice, racism, and other gatekeeping things never make sense. They just don't.
True.
It's again, really just being objectionable for being objectionable sake.
Yeah. And again, you can have your space in within the game and never touch that. And it's totally fine. But, you know, it was a big enough story that it came across several social media things I saw. I saw it on Twitter, saw some people talking about it on Facebook. I saw an article written about it. So obviously, you know, people have made enough of a story out of it. But so far, to Games Workshop's credit, they are standing their ground on it.
Because they know that this small group of people are giving Warhammer a negative reputation. And I don't know why you would want to be part of such a community, but there are people who really just, this is what they pride themselves on, is gatekeeping. And again,
you know, I'll also say this too. You know, the people who say, well, fine, you know, I'm not going to buy anything anymore, I'm going to walk away, whatever. There's two things there. One, okay, fine. They're probably replacing you with every other person they add because they're adding this new thing. And that goes for everything, not just Warhammer. But the other part is too, we also know people are bad about keeping boycotts. Let's be real. Yeah. Like, most people I talk to boycott something, they're already done in a month. Like, they gave it the college try, and they're already back to buying whatever it was they said they were going to boycott. Whatever.
I mean, did you see Kid Rock on Fox News wearing a Budweiser hat when the host called about it? I don't even think he realized. He probably
had
so many Budweiser hats, he threw one on and didn't even, he'd forgotten about the boycott. I guess exactly. Nobody around him reminded him.
They ain't been boycotting nothing for months. Because, dude, I'll tell you, my house, literally, I for real try to boycott Nestle. And, man, it's hard.
They're everywhere.
They own, like, I think, like, 40 different brands at this point. And not even all of them are food. Some are, like, animal products and cat food and whatever. Like, it's so hard. Like, and occasionally I'll see something, I'm like, oh, this looks cool. And then I look at the label, and it's like, nope, they're one of the companies owned by Nestle. Gosh damn it. You know, right? So I get it's difficult, but yeah, it's a thing. But yeah, I think ultimately, you know, thumbs up to Games Workshop. They've been trying to change their image for, hell, 3-4 years now, and they seem to be on the right side of a lot of things. And overall, hey, players, if you're one of the people that's bothered, like, honestly, you don't have to even worry about that part of the story. Let some other people enjoy it. Keep doing what you're doing. The game's still going to be the same, and you'll probably have more opportunities because of it. But all right, Brian, you're up.
Man, Fallout's having a renaissance here. We've got, you know, the secret lair that everybody appears to love. Apparently sold out is hard to get already. And, you know, we're always worried about TV show movie adaptations because, let's be honest, for every, you know, well, for every Fallout, there has been Double Dragons. Street Fighters that have been just incredible.
Dude, I forgot about Double Dragon. That was, ooh.
Everyone did. Ooh. Literally everyone did because they cast noted martial artist Scott Wolf as one of the lead brothers. But yeah, the Fallout adaptation on Amazon Prime, it's not just a good video game TV show. It's a good TV show. It's just enjoyable, well-written, well acted. And now, yes, if you are a fan of Fallout, you're going to love it even more because there are all the Easter eggs. It captures Fallout's kind of quirky view on war and capitalism really perfectly. Again, just phenomenal job. And as you would figure, everything that they hoped for, the Fallout sales and all the video games have skyrocketed because a bunch of people are just finding out about Fallout for the first time. Or people like me that have, you know, not played Fallout and been like, oh, yeah, I never did finish that mission. I saw that thing. Well, let me try this kind of playthrough. And this is what can happen when you do a video game adaptation or just any kind of same thing for a book. Is if you do a good job with the property, this is what can happen. I mean, reviews have been pretty much positive everywhere I've seen.
Yeah, I think there's two things you pointed on that I think are very big. One is just making a good show first, right? More than anything else. So like the average person who's just like, well, I've heard of this. Let me tune in and see what this is about. because that's how you make new fans, right? Because they don't know anything about the previous product, but if the thing that draws them in is good, that's how you get it. And then, you know, like it does work when you align all these things, you know, where we've talked before about it's not a coincidence when they're launching these Universes Beyond products and these Secret Lair products, whatever. Like, it's all part of a larger campaign to get people talking about stuff, get it on websites, get it on people's radars.
Synergy, and, as they like to call it in corporate America.
Yeah. And it went great in Magic. And we basically were talking about it for a couple of months on the lead up to this even happening, you know? And then all the video game websites are talking about it. And now, like you're saying, I've seen a few different content creators digging up old Fallout stuff or sharing some of their own footage. And, you know, so, yeah, they're going to make a lot of money because of this TV series. So
this
good
is the
on
type
them.
Of game you can easily sink hundreds of hours into and then still, like in my latest playthrough of Fallout 4 that I picked up after watching the TV show, I'm still running into things where I played this game through two or three times and I didn't even know that was in here. It's that kind of just expansive, incredible game.
No, that's good, man. That I'm glad to hear it went well, because I've seen some other reviews from people who've liked it. The only complaints I've seen are from those people that are like one issue concerned. So like the one thing they really wanted absolutely perfect, it's not. So then like the show is trash. So they're like doing the whole baby out with the bathwater thing. You know, it's just right. Like, come on. Like, if the rest of it's good and that one detail's not perfect, like, let it ride, man. Why not?
Yeah, because you can't do everything that happened in the video game, or, you know, it's a spoiler for everybody that's ever played the game. It's just everybody will know exactly what's going to happen.
I also feel, though, like a movie, a book, a video game, like, they're all different medium that have longer and different lengths of time to tell their stories.
Yeah.
Right? Because, like, in a video game, you well, hell, playing Baldur's Gate, you can be 200 hours into the damn thing, you know?
Yep, and still not have seen everything and everyone.
Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, in a book, okay, you get 300, 400, 500 pages, but you can do that at your own pace, right? A TV show is like, okay, we got to make everything relevant to this section of the plot fit in the next 48 minutes, right? Like, or 45
because
minutes.
Because all of us have probably a minimum of 6 or 7 streaming services. You only really have 5 or 6 minutes to catch people's attention.
Yeah.
There's too much stuff to binge. You really, and, again, only get that first few minutes. If it takes,
go ahead.
If it takes, you know, an hour or 2 hours to get into your show, I'm probably not ever going to get hooked on it.
See, it's funny. I was just about to say, and I can't remember the name, but somebody mentioned a couple of people. There's a show on Netflix that so many people were giving up on after the first episode, but almost everybody's been like, no, you got to get to episode 3. And then when people get to episode 3, apparently it's a banger the rest of the way. But for some reason, the first like 2.25 episodes sound like they're trash. Like, it's all set up that's super slow and whatever. Yeah, but you got to have the internet to get you to episode 3, basically.
Yeah, you just can't be doing that anymore. Look at even, you know, with the Rings of Power. I mean, you figure who's a more loyal fan base in Lord of the Rings. But by the same token, if you're 2 or 3 episodes in and you haven't enticed them, they're going to be out too. And they're going to tell all their other friends, their fans, not to watch it, which is what happened with a lot of people with Rings of Power.
And, you know, not to just like go off tangent too much, but I think that's a good point. It's not so much even that you have to have this like crazy pace, it's just like you just have to connect faster because there's so many options, like you're saying. Like, hell, just on any of them alone, Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, whatever, like you could flip through hell damn near 1,000 movies titles in like 2 minutes if you wanted to. Like, there's tons. So yeah,
and it doesn't have to be, you know, great fight scenes. It doesn't have to be explosions. It could be just like, let's say an actor is just carrying stuff and you want to see, like, for example, in Fallout, Walton Goggins, who you've probably seen in Django, he's one of those actors that whatever he's in, even if the script might be trash, Walton Goggins is always good. And his character, you want to know, like, how did this guy get into this situation and how is he going to get out of it?
Yeah, I'm just happy for it, man. If you're a Fallout fan, congratulations. Sounds like not only is the show good, you're probably going to get a couple seasons worth. So good on you. And now I might end up watching it, and I'm not even a Fallout fan, but everybody said it's a good show, so I might just watch it and enjoy a good show. Like, who knows? But let's get into what did we learn, because there's a couple of interesting things here, and the way the internet's going to treat a couple of things, we'll see. But what do you got, Brian?
Yeah, Overwatch, season 10 of Overwatch 2, speaking of content and streaming and all the things going on, just launched, and kind of one of the centerpieces of this season is a new character named Venture, and they are actually Overwatch's first non-binary character. They are a DPS, and very kind of a, just something from hearing, I haven't had a chance to play the character yet, because, you know, new character, everyone wants to play the new character. But they are DPS, and they have a drill, and they kind of just, it was like Dig Dug, you know, they can just dive into the ground, end up behind your team, and just destroy everybody before you have even realized what's happened, and then kind of dig back underground and get out. If anybody plays, I guess, Rek'Sai in League of Legends, sounds like that kind of character.
That's crazy.
And also, in addition to just being what seems like a very fun character and a history-making character, this is going to be the first character in Overwatch 2's new season pass model. It used to be if a new character came out, you had to crank, I think, until level 55 to unlock them, or give Overwatch $15. And Venture is going to be the first character that they are free at launch, so you can try them, see if you like them, and if not, you don't have to worry about it anymore. But that's a whole brand new way they're doing it. I don't know how they're going to monetize stuff now, because one of the things they're using is a carrot, because the game is going free to play, essentially. One of the things they're using is, hey, if you want the new character right when the new character launches, give us some money. And they decide they're not doing that. So Venture is the first character released that way, and we are kind of all eager to see how it works out. And again, how Overwatch 2 is going to continue to monetize this project.
That's interesting because, and again, I haven't played League of Legends in years at this point, but when I did play, they kind of had, it was either every week or every couple weeks, they had just like a rotating selection of like 8 or 10 champions you could pick from. But if you wanted one permanently, you paid them like, I don't know, some small amount, like $5 or $6. And then you could always have access to that character in your pool or whatever. So I assume that was the model they were going to carry for Overwatch, but Though I do have a random question.
They are strictly, go ahead.
You would know, being an Overwatch player, like, how do they define seasons in Overwatch?
Oh, I have no idea. When ones just, they'll tell you, hey, season 2 starts in X number of days. I don't know what they're, I guess you're usually probably like 60, 70 days. And I don't know what the.
Oh, weird. Okay. Yeah. Cause when I play Teamfight Tactics, they make like whole new, like themes, and then a different selection of characters like 3 different times throughout the season. So you get new theme, and that'll last for usually like 3 or 4 months. And then there'll be 4 to 6 week type intervals where they swap out the characters that you have access to or whatever. And that kind of defines it. So I'm just kind of curious.
Of the things they're doing now is they do try to have something interesting and new to start each season. Like, it's not always a new character. Sometimes, like I think last time they reworked rank plays, they did kind of a soft reset of everybody's ranked, and that was the thing that would lure you back in. In this case, obviously, new character is free. That's hopefully gonna get people back in, and then I guess we'll kind of see what they cook up for season 11.
Okay. Well, mine was learning, or being reminded, that apparently content creators aren't allowed to have opinions. And this comes up because Marques Brownlee, or if you know him on the internet, probably is MKBHD, who's been doing tech review videos since he was a kid, I think, for like 15 or 18 years now. He's been on YouTube since the beginning. But he reviewed a new item, and it's called the Humane Something, but it's basically, for lack of a better term, like, if you don't know what it is, picture like the Star Trek little thing that you touch on your chest, kind of like that, but it's obviously more bulky and you can talk to it, and it operates kind of like all the things your phone can do with some other cool features. And he didn't like it, and he did a review explaining, like, hey, here's all the reasons I don't like it. And he was even fair and said, hey, the build quality is good, here's the 2 or 3 things I do like about it that I think it does well, but there's all these other things it does that are kind of slow, and the information's not necessarily accurate. And the things it can do that my phone does, it does slower than my phone. And, you know, some legit reasons to not like it. And then it started like, oh, well, posting stuff like that with those titles is just going to kill companies and blah, blah, blah. And like, one, it's not going to kill the company. Half the people who watch his videos aren't even planning to buy it. They just want to see a good review video of a cool product that they've seen promoted all over social media or whatever, right? The other is, if the product's good, but one person says it's bad, that's not going to kill the product because everybody else is going to say it's good. As it turns out, a bunch of other people also said they had the same problems with it. There was like 30 other videos within the last week of people also saying the things they don't like about it. But then the other side of it, which I've seen happen in his comment section, is when he legitimately likes a thing, they're like, oh, well, you're just kissing up to him now, or you're just trying not to leave a bad review because of X, Y. It's like, you so, can't win. Yeah, so if he likes a thing, then he's just brown nosing. But if he tells you he doesn't like a thing, he's trying to kill the company. It's like, do you not want him to do a review? And we talked about it before. We get the same thing. Like, I've been on my own set, and people, you know, I do say something positive about, like, the latest set, say, like, Thunder Junction. And people are like, oh, well, you're just trying to kiss up to WotC to try to get more people to buy Thunder Junction or whatever, and blah, blah, blah. Like, I had a comment just last week where somebody said something. Well, how did he word it? Like, oh, it was like, WotC's probably just going out and asking y'all to try to get their cash cows to buy more Magic or whatever. And I'm like, what? I'm like, dude, I'm literally just talking about like 10 cards you should pay attention to in the set. Like, I ain't even like, what? like, what are you talking about? Like, one of them was a comment on me and Dev over at SBMTG. We did our, I think it was like 10 underrated cards or something in the set. Like, what does that have to do with anything at Wizards? Like, if anything, we're telling you to pay attention to the cheap cards that nobody's paying attention to right now, right? Like, that's not even saying go and buy a bunch of packs to try to get these cards.
Yeah, I'm saying, so, like, these are the cards you can invest in.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So trying to give you money.
Yeah, it's just weird, man. Like, people are going to have opinions. The only thing is, I always tell people, the only thing that matters is if the person is being genuine. That's it. Like it or dislike it. If they're being genuine, cool. That's their opinion. They're entitled to that. They might like it for different reasons than you do, because it fits them or their life or their lifestyle or their organization thing or whatever better than it does for you. And that's okay. Like, not everybody's going to like everything. Matter of fact, anytime I go get a new phone, I probably watch 3 or 4 different people review the phone because each one's using it for different things. And somebody goes, oh, the battery time is this much because they use it this way. But somebody else who uses it more similar to me is like, oh, I can go all day on the battery unless I'm doing X, Y, Z. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. That phone might work for me, right? I don't just look at one person that says, oh, well, this phone's trash. You shouldn't buy it. And I'm like, okay, well, let me check with some other people because I don't really care about all the things you don't like. You know what I mean? Like, let me check this other person. So, like, it's weird. I don't know why that just started up, but yeah, he was at the center of that. He ended up doing an interview about it with Colin and Samir, who also have a big YouTube channel. It was a whole mess this week. And it's like, man, at no point did anybody say anything he said wasn't accurate. At no point did anybody say he wasn't being honest. At no point did anybody say he was favoring somebody or not favoring somebody. Matter of fact, one of the things he did point out, which I thought was interesting, he said that he actually tries not to do deals with electronics companies because he mostly reviews electronics and on his car channel cars, but he doesn't want that to be a point of concern, even though he knows he wouldn't tank a review or whatever. He doesn't want that to be a thing for the viewer. So he has deals with like the Ridge wallet and, you know, some of these other things because he doesn't review that stuff. He uses them, but he doesn't have a channel about reviewing it. Right. So that, I'm like, okay, even that speaks to his ethics quite a bit, because I'm sure a bunch of electronic companies have probably come to him and been like, hey, you got a channel where videos get 10 million views or whatever. We want to put something on your channel because we know people into electronics are watching your stuff. And he turns most of them down. So, you know, it's just interesting, though. Like, people are allowed to have opinions, y'all. We got to get over ourselves. But anyway, let's get into a couple interesting topics here before we wrap up with the dinner table. So, Twitch, we haven't said anything about them in a minute. And this time,
they were getting thirsty for attention.
It's weird because this is like both good news and bad news for Twitch. Like, okay, we'll start with the bad. Apparently, something broke on the tech side at Twitch's stuff, and a bunch of people just were no longer subbed to different channels on Twitch. Nobody knows why. I'm sure somebody tech side of Twitch probably figured out, but we don't know the reason. We just know that a bunch of people went, hey, I know I'm subscribed to this channel. I've been subscribed to this channel for X amount of time. Why am I not all of a sudden? And then a few other people noticed. And then some creators went, hey, I have a much lower sub count than I should have. What the hell's going on? So Twitch went and looked into it. Obviously, there was a tech side issue, some type of break of something. But they did detail a bunch of things they're doing. And I'm going to try to read them off here because it's quite a lot that Twitch is doing here. So to Twitch's credit, on Twitter, the Twitch support posted up, thanks for your patience. You know, we have a lot going on. We will be emailing all impacted folks in the coming week with full details. So to make it up to streamers, they're going to pay them 1 month's revenue of their missing subs with their upcoming payout cycle. So whatever your normal, I'm assuming like average month or whatever is, they're going to make sure you're at least made whole on that for the next payment cycle, at least from what it sounds like. And then to continue their subs that were canceled, the viewers will need to resubscribe. They apparently don't have a way to fix that, but at least you can tell all your people, hey, just resubscribe to the channel.
That's unfortunate, though.
Yeah, that's the tough part.
Yeah.
They did say for people to resubscribe, they'll reinstate any sub streaks that people had up until May 6th. So, you know, some people have been subscribed to channels for literally years, and they want to keep showing that loyalty, so that'll be taken care of. And then they said, for whatever you have, they're going to add 1 month to your streak just to correct for the loss. So you don't even have to worry about that. And they said there'll be a couple other things, but they'll have it in their patch notes and other stuff that are coming up. But credit to Twitch, right? This is the type of issue I feel like past Twitch would have kind of drugged their feet a little bit, would have been like, well, let's see what the problem is. We don't want to post too much publicly. But it sounds like they got on this fairly quickly and have a... not perfect, but at least within what's capable, a reasonable solution. And the fact that it's Twitch and their solution includes, hey, we're going to make sure you're made whole for this month.
Yeah, that's important.
That's a shocker. Because you know as well as I do, anything that involves money with Twitch, man, it's blood from a stone back in the day. Like, they weren't letting it go.
Hey, forget about money. Just even getting a response to a problem you're having is blood from a stone, really.
I still have two messages that never got returned from Twitch.
Like, that's industry standard, unfortunately.
I didn't even get the boilerplate, like, we've received your message. Yeah. You know, we'll try to respond in 24 hours. I didn't even get that. Like, I didn't get nothing. And I even tried different email addresses just in case. And I was like, all right, I guess they just don't want to talk to me. I don't know. But yeah, so thumbs up. Credit to Twitch, at least. Because, you know, tech stuff happens. I don't know the reason. Probably we'll never know. But at least they got on it quick, and at least they're trying to make it right. So I'm sure we'll hear in the next couple of weeks, probably the end of a month, how much it affected different creators if some people don't resubscribe or whatever. But, you know, things happen. At least they tried. Another thing that came across on social media this week, MTG booty. That's a thing. Now, I didn't realize this was a yearly thing. Somehow I missed it last year. I remember the year before, because I may even have participated in that one. But
yeah, you did.
Last year, I thought that was just like a one-off thing, but apparently we're doing MTG booty every year. But for people that don't know what it is, it's basically a way for everybody to kind of show that you can be comfortable with your body and still play games, particularly Magic, as a way to kind of support women and non-males in the community and just be supportive. And you know what? I'm down with it. And people are having fun with it. They're posing in weird things, and they're being funny, like they got caught being seen or whatever, right? It's all fun, man. Like, some people were getting offended by it or whatever. It's like, dude, this is kind of the point. Like, it doesn't affect anything. It's not like people are out there being nude or whatever. It's not even that, right? Most people are still even in jeans for the most part in a lot of the pictures that I saw. So just let people be supportive. It's fun. I get the point. If you don't participate, you don't participate. It's okay. Hell, you can go into Twitter. I think you just block the hashtag if it shows up so you don't even see the post. But it's cool that the community is at least doing that, honestly, in a fun form of solidarity, right? Like, exactly. It's not... not being taken too seriously. We're just goofing off and just saying like, hey, here's the thing we can do to kind of remind our communities. And I'm for it, man.
That we're glad you're here. We support you, and we want to keep supporting you and keep our communities being diverse.
Yeah, for sure. I'm for it. And again, it's a harmless thing that people are doing to show support and just have fun with it. And to me, that's my favorite kind, where you can almost make fun of the situation while getting to support somebody, and everybody can have a good laugh with it, right? An interesting thing here, and this is something, and I should give credit where it's due here for the person or site who put this together, but I don't know what site is from, but it was compiled by a person who goes by Cirkovitz, I believe. But, 17 Lands, that's the website. And 17lands.com. They compiled as much information as they could for day one of Thunder Junction. And they did color pairs, because people mostly still play in color pairs, as it turns out. Not a surprise. But after putting everything together, it turns out, sucks. I don't have a better way to put that. Like, and I'll be honest, like, I've tried the last couple, because, you know, when you're going through a long season, you're just trying to make content with different decks and strategies or whatever when you're putting up stuff every day. And man, the Izzet ones were the most, what's the best word? Unfun?
Bad?
I mean, just bad. Like, they just weren't fun. Like, because some of the other decks I've played are bad, but I enjoy playing them. And they're doing some fun stuff, and it's entertaining. The deck's just not good. But, yeah, I just didn't even enjoy it. By the time I got to the end of the video, I was just like, man, y'all, I even told my people, I'm like, I'm going to be honest with y'all. This wasn't even fun. Like, cannot recommend it. And it's been that way for like 2 years, it feels like. I don't even remember when the last time I ran into a consistent, not even top tier, just decent Izzet deck. Like, it just hasn't been a thing for a while. And as it turns out, 50%, and you're like, oh, okay, that's fine. But when you look at all the other things, 54%+ on everything else. So a significant drop when you're looking at Izzet compared to other things, which is crazy. That just means it's not good by comparison. Now, they didn't do 3-color or 4-color combinations, so that's where other losses and wins will come in. But if you're just looking at strictly just color pairs, Izzet underperforms compared to all the others by an average, really, of like 6% plus, but no less than 4%. So yeah, if you're a fan of Izzet, you might just need to give it up for a little bit. Now ain't the time. At least here in the early goings of Thunder Junction. And I don't know, man. like, what do you even tell somebody who's a fan of those colors that have been struggling for this long?
I guess not to play them, pretty much. You just show them the data if they just want to do it for fun.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. I mean, you know, when people reach out to me and they're like, hey, what do you have for ideas? And I'm like, man, I can give you some ideas, but none of them are going to be good or fun. Like, I can make them better than what you have, but it still isn't going to do anything, you know, sort of the way I feel. So, yeah, that's just figured I'd share it. It was interesting news I saw pop up today on the internet. So there you go. I know it. So now you know it. But that brings us to the dinner table. And this one's one just kind of, this is to fill in Color of Magic lore, I think, more than anything else. Because I realize I don't even know this answer about you, and you probably don't know this answer about me. So this will be a fun discussion. So I feel like I
probably do. I feel like they're probably the same.
Maybe. So yeah, I'll ask you, Brian. It's a two-part question. What's the first, what we'll call traditional card or board game you remember growing up playing and having fun? And then as an adult, what is the first more complicated European style hobby board game that you remember enjoying that kind of turned you onto that style of game?
I'd say Uno would probably be the first card game, and I'm betting it's probably one of yours. If that makes sense. The one, it's probably one of yours.
And then what did you have for your actual, like, more adult board game, we'll call it?
I don't know if I'd consider it adult. It was Overpower was, I think, the first thing that got me into collectible card gaming. Which is the Fleer Marvel game that probably nobody other than me and a couple of other people remember. That's why I say early, early 90s.
Good old Overpower.
The Marvel license.
Yeah, that would have been like
actually bought packs of something and learned, oh, there's, you know, there's chase rares and things. I mean, I was such a noob when I first started that somebody pulled a Wolverine card and I was trying to see what character was on the front of the pack because I thought that in some way had something to do with what cards you got out of it, of course.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. Overpower, man. That was like sometime between like 95 and 96-ish?
Somewhere in that area.
In that window?
Early to mid-90s, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? Okay, side note. Do you remember at that time there were some Marvel and DC trading cards that came out where they actually, you could get a literal holographic card where like the little Batman would stand up off the card, which was crazy. I haven't even seen anything since like that. I don't even know what those would be worth today.
Yeah, I guess they didn't move enough of them.
Yeah, but they were like one per case or something. They had like some crazy, they were hard to get, but I remember those being pretty wild. Yeah, you know, I think for me, it's either Uno or Monopoly.
That has to be my other, definitely. I figure Uno was first and then Monopoly. See, I figured probably.
Because like I remember playing a lot of both growing up, but I couldn't tell you which was first. I'm assuming it had to be Uno because the rules are simpler.
Yeah, I feel like it had to be Uno for me.
But it's weird that I can't pinpoint that. But I remember playing both of those a lot growing up. So I'm assuming it was also Uno.
Plus, you really need more people to play Monopoly. And a lot of times, it was just me and my sister are playing the game.
So well, see, most of the time when I played, I was playing with either adults or playing with cousins.
Yeah.
When I played. So I almost always had Monopoly people.
Isn't going to be fun.
Yeah, so that's makes a lot of sense that would be it. But I would say for me, you know, excluding Magic, you know, it would probably have been something like a couple of years later when I played Settlers of Catan for the first time. And I think that was because it introduced a board game where, like, there were more decisions other than, like, your one action of buy a thing, right? Or just roll the dice and move your piece. Because that's almost what every board game was. It's roll your dice, move your piece. Or you get to take one action of either like buy a thing or sell a card or whatever it is. Whereas this was like, oh, wait, I can trade things and then I can decide where I go. And then like, maybe I want to build a road and then we could score points for that. And it's like, and that was way more interesting to me than Monopoly. Cause like, oh, well, I control a lot more stuff in this game. Like even the die roll doesn't crush you because I'm like, that's just to get resources for the most part in that game. And then, you know, you spend your resources doing other things. And it was like, oh, okay, well, what other games like this exist? And then you find out there's like, you know, there's our, at the time, was still like,
by God, millions is the rock.
Yeah, there was like 30 more. And then each year there ended up being like an extra couple hundred and a couple hundred. Now we get hundreds and hundreds a year, it feels like. But yeah, so that was probably what opened it for me, which was good because then around that time, turns out I was going to be taking over a game store and I kind of need to know about some of those. So the timing was pretty good, as it turns out. But yeah, it's actually kind of surprising. You know, I think Uno is that first game for a lot of people, especially for, I would say, for a lower income or poorer community, because Uno decks were like $4, $5, you know.
And they're sold everywhere. You can buy Uno decks at some of the gas stations. I mean, it's everywhere.
Oh, and you could play with 4 or 5 people.
Right.
You know, carry them to every picnic, barbecue, you know, whatever.
Reunion, whatever.
Yeah, so that makes a lot of sense. I bet you for a lot of listeners or viewers, that's probably their first game or one of their first games as well. Because again, all you got to do is know numbers and colors and you can play the game. So pretty much if you're 4 years old plus, for the most part, you can probably be taught the game, you know, really. But all right, Brian, with all that being said, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on the social media machines?
I am Brian Sonic on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube.
And you can find me everywhere, Power Dragon, PowerDragn. And if you want Thunder Junction content, hit up my channel because I got a whole bunch of stuff coming down the pipe. But wherever you're watching or listening, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. Please remember to take care of yourselves and your family. Remember to be awesome, and most importantly, be awesome to each other.
If you'd like to further support Color of Magic, you can find us on our website at colorofmtg.com. We also have a Patreon if you'd like to donate, other patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook under Color of Magic. And if you want to follow us along at Twitter, you can find us there at ColorOfMTG. And as always, please share the podcast around to your friends, your network, people you think might enjoy it, because every little bit helps as we're trying to increase our user base.